Today, Greg and I are going to be doing the meditation about our recent trip to Israel and Jordan. We went there in early March. We went on this trip through Westgate Mennonite Collegiate. Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah? Just? So speak louder? Okay. Westgate, where four of our five children attended, regularly offers an opportunity for students to go on a study tour to the Middle East. 2 years ago, our daughters Jessica and Samantha went on this trip and loved it. So we were really happy when this year the study tour was offered to adults, parents of children who had been at Westgate. We were very excited to have this opportunity. However, we both felt a little hesitation. It would be 38 Mennonites and us. We were a little worried that they might all know each other quite well and we would be the odd ones out. As it turned out, the reality was that although some knew each other, many had only a passing acquaintance. It ended up to be a warm, friendly, and welcoming group of fellow travelers. There was lots of laughter, learning, and fun. In a small way, it was our experience of being the other and of being welcomed in. The teacher in charge of the trips has developed a connection with a school in northern Israel. The Mar Elias School and Westgate do a student exchange, which is a great opportunity for sharing and learning. The Mar Elias School was started by Father Shakur, a Palestinian Christian. Father Shakur, who calls himself a man from Galilee, grew up in the Galilean area, went to study in Europe to become a priest, then returned to Israel. He had and has a vision of peace for Israel and believes that it will promote healing when people can learn and be together. So he started the Mar Elias School, where Christians, Muslims, and Jews are all welcome to study together. This is a very radical idea, as in Israel now, people from different religious groups have almost no contact with each other. And yet at this school, Christians and Muslims are spending time together as fellow students and friends. We were lucky enough to meet Father Shakur and hear some of his stories of striving for a different vision of Israel. He has two books that are well worth reading for an insight into being a Palestinian Christian. I had been to Israel many, many years ago to work on a kibbutz. I went because I wanted to help build Israel. I was appalled at how the Jews had been treated in the Second World War. I knew how Jews have experienced discrimination everywhere they have lived through the ages. Close to home, in World War II, Canada wouldn't allow Jews to escape Europe to come here. People were turned away only to end up in concentration camps. Even closer to home, it wasn't that long ago that in Winnipeg, Jews weren't allowed into many clubs, couldn't buy land at places like Victoria Beach, and there was a quota on how many Jews could be admitted to medical school. Given the past and current discrimination, when I was in my 20s, I thought it would be a good idea for the Jewish people to have their own country where they could be safe. However, the country that was to be the Jewish homeland already had inhabitants. The result of the creation of a Jewish state in Israel was that the Palestinian people were pushed off their land, and this continues today as Israelis build settlements in the occupied territory. The army protects these settlements by terrorizing and bullying the Palestinians who live close by. The Palestinians now live in refugee camps in Israel and in the surrounding countries. They want to return to their own land that they have lived on for centuries, but aren't allowed to. They have become a people without a country, and they have little hope. Traveling in Israel this time, I felt the awe of being there in this land written of in the Bible. However, I was aware of the tension of knowing the Jews' desire to have a safe homeland, and yet how this has resulted in the horrible plight of the Palestinian people. I wonder how it has happened that a group such as the Jews, who for so long have experienced discrimination, hatred, and oppression, have now become the oppressor. This question haunted me throughout our trip. The first full day of our tour, we spent seeing many of the spots from Jesus' ministry. The first one was the Church of the Multiplication, which we were told was the exact spot where the loaves and fishes had fed the multitudes. That day we saw many exact spots where things had occurred, including the place on the River Jordan where Jesus had been baptized. At this place, you too could be baptized. They had white robes and a religious person who would perform the baptism, all for a fee, of course. And upon leaving, you walk through a very pricey tourist shop. It was amazing to see these places. However, imagine our surprise when on another day we were shown the exact spot where Jesus had been baptized, except it was in a different place. In fact, over the 2 weeks, we were shown the exact spot something had occurred, only to be shown a different place the next day. I felt torn between wanting to see these places and yet feeling the skepticism of knowing that the tourist industry was thriving off of these exact spots. I watched as all our groups slowly lost some of the desire to see these places, especially when it was the second time around. I remember one day we had been traveling all day on the bus, including spending time crossing the border from Israel to Jordan. It was late in the day, dark, and we just wanted to get to our hotel and have supper. The bus stopped, and we all looked out hoping to see our hotel. But no, the guide wanted us to get out and see this place in Jordan where Moses had struck the rock for water. Had we not seen this place yesterday in Israel? To our guide's disappointment, we unanimously said we were okay to pass on this one. In Jerusalem, we visited two very different places, which especially highlighted for me this experience of claims of historical and biblical significance. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre was Catholic and purported to be on the exact spot where Jesus had been crucified and buried. It was a huge, old, ornate, elaborate church, practically dripping with gold. There were lots of people and long lineups to touch the rock where he was crucified, and then again to touch the slab where he had been laid, and then to see the tomb. As I too lined up and waited to touch these stones, I wondered, is this what it's about? The next day, we visited the Garden Tomb. My two daughters had talked about that being one of their favorite places in Israel, and I could see why. It was a quiet, small, peaceful, lovely garden where they only led in small groups of people at a time. There were no great claims to fame, no exact spot. Our guide said that there was an ancient tomb there, which we did go to see. He said that perhaps this was where Jesus was laid in the tomb, perhaps not, but that it was a calm, quiet place to reflect and ponder on your faith journey. This place was a much better fit for me. I'm so glad I went on the trip and had the opportunity to have those wonderful experiences of camaraderie, laughter, being in those biblical locations, imagining Jesus walking there, and yes, even seeing some of those exact spots. I reflected on many things while I was there and after about how it's not the exact spot that's important, but it's about the message. What was Jesus saying? How do we move away from the literal to the figurative? How do we live out our faith? How do we act in the world?
Easy for you. All right. Thank you, Anne, for those wonderful reflections. And as I reflected on our trip to the Middle East, it was so often the literal experience of being there that resonated with me. On our second day, some of us kayaked on the Sea of Galilee. It was a beautiful, sunny, and calm day. Perfect for taking in the views and reflecting on them. I recalled then that just a few weeks before, I'd worked on a passage in the book of Matthew to be read for the next service. In that reading, Jesus is on the Sea of Galilee, and he calms the storm. As I thought on this, It began to take on a new and more literal aspect to me. I was now floating on the calm Galilean Sea. The kayak trip continued, and our leader pointed out the bright yellow flowers of the mustard plants growing on the hilly bank leading into the water. I now could imagine Jesus looking out on this and developing his parable of the mustard seeds. After landing our kayaks on the shore, we walked to Capernaum. This town is mentioned in all four Gospels and was likely the center of Jesus' public ministry in Galilee after leaving Nazareth. It was a center for commerce. People came from all around, busy to buy and sell. If you had a message you wanted to share, this was the perfect place to do it. People from all over Galilee and beyond would bring their bags of olives for the olive presses to extract the oil. Apparently, the longer you were willing to wait for your oil, the less they would charge you. This would encourage the visitors to stay longer and hopefully spend more money. I could imagine one of the oil press merchants saying, "Hey, why not spend a few days here? And we'll give you a cheaper price. While you're here, you can catch that teacher healer, Jesus. He's beginning to gain quite a following. He'll be speaking at the synagogue tomorrow." After Galilee, we spent some time in Jordan, by the Dead Sea, and then turned back toward the West Bank, and finally to Jerusalem. Jesus, too, ended his ministry in Jerusalem. And today, Palm Sunday, we mark his triumphant entry into the city. Our entry into Jerusalem wasn't so triumphant. It was pouring rain, and we had to carry our backpacks through the alleys and the roads, getting soaked. But while in Jerusalem, we attended a Lutheran church service. One of the readings was from Luke 13, 31 to 35. Two lines from this reading gave me another literal pause. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who sent you, how often have I longed to gather your children together as hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were not willing." I felt this exhortation speaking directly, literally, to the situation in Jerusalem today. In fact, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre that Anne was talking about has difficulties of its own, because there's a number of religious groups there, all Christian groups, but they can't seem to agree on anything. In fact, they agree so little, there's very little repairs been done on that church, so it's starting to fall apart. And in fact, it's hard to know if the church will be opened because they can't agree who's going to open it. They finally agreed that now a Muslim will open the church. On the last night in Jerusalem, two people from the Parents Circle Families Forum, the PCCF, met with us at our hotel. This is an organization of Israelis and Palestinians who have lost immediate members of their family due to the conflict. This organization embraces dialogue as an alternative to violence. Members develop deep connections with each other by sharing their stories of loss. A major part of their outreach is to have an Israeli Jew and a Palestinian meet with groups and repeat their stories of loss. We had the privilege to listen to two such stories. The stories were immensely tragic. Both had lost brothers. Heartbreaking, as both individuals filled in the details of their losses. But what was even more touching was the obvious deep sympathy and love these two individuals had for each other. The Jewish man and the Palestinian women embraced each other after their stories were completed. both had traveled that dark road of hate to reconciliation to deep caring. It was incredibly moving, a literal example of what resurrection is all about. From despair to hope, from death to life.